Right, here we go, 9:06. Got to get Tom in here. We got a whole great big bucket full of news. But Tommy, get in here. Where have you been?
Where's your bucket?
I got it. It's over here. It's full of news. You made me laugh. I didn't know you could hear me. I didn't realize when the door was coming through, you heard the word bucket in there. Oh, righty. Wow, right off the top. We are so lucky to be able to have somebody come in and just bring news to the show. Not just news. Anna Scott.
Hello.
First of all, for those of you that tuned in yesterday, I'm going to let you know I forgive you. I forgive you.
You forgive me?
Yes, for the use of paddy wagon.
Oh, gosh. Oh, I did. I had to apologize on Twitter. I was unaware.
Really?
I did. He said he was sure it was unintentional, but he made me aware that that was not perhaps an offensive term.
Hold on a second. Was that from an Irishman? An Irishman wrote you that he was offended?
He did not sound Irish.
Okay,
his last
fine.
Name did not, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah. I did the right thing. I apologize. My apologies to anyone else who might have been offended.
We had a ball with it. But anyway, go on, Anna Scott.
Okay. So, ST3.
Yes.
Sound Transit is going to be sued over the ST3, specifically about the car tab fees and the valuation system being used. Lawyers for a group of 7 local drivers filed a complaint in Pierce County Court yesterday. They're claiming that a 2015 bill passed by the legislature okaying the content of the ST3 proposal and giving Sound Transit the authority to send it to voters was actually unconstitutional. They're saying that the outdate was... Some Republican lawmakers have said the same thing, that they were surprised the agency was using an older inflated valuation method to calculate the car tab tax and a new, more accurate valuation system was approved in 2006. So that's basically the center. What the lawyers for this lawsuit are saying is that the description in the bill that was approved by the legislature that eventually went to voters on which valuation system would be used didn't quote an RCW. And instead was just a vague reference to a 1996 law. And Joel Ard, one of the lawyers behind this case, tells KTTH's Todd Herman that you can't do that.
If you're going to amend a statute, you have to say what you're changing. You have to point to the existing statute and what it says and how it's going to be different in the future. That wasn't done in the legislation that enabled the Sound Transit 3 bond issue.
So he says that... Anybody looking at that would have to do a lot of research and look at all of the history, the judgments and legal history involving our motor vehicle excise tax and the way those are calculated to even have an idea of what that was supposed to mean. Some Republican lawmakers have said the same thing, like Senator O'Ban, and claimed that they didn't know when they approved that package what they were signing off on. So that's kind of the legal argument there. The goal of this case is a couple of things.
The outcome of the case would be to strike the portion of the statute that offends the Constitution. There's not any kind of individual penalty or treble damages or things like that. On the other hand, our position is because you were never allowed to levy the tax, you have to refund what you have levied since you began that unconstitutional levy.
And the final bill on tally on that would be $240 million that they want refunded in what they call unauthorized taxes. They also want an injunction to stop any further taxes from being collected. Sound Transit says it's confident in the validity of the law and argues that it was debated heavily in the legislature and everybody knew what they were signing off on. They also say any reduction in the car tab taxes is going to kill possibly some of the ST3 projects.
Mm. Yeah, I think it makes sense that voters might not know, but the legislators did know. It was debated and it was voted down.
Not all of them didn't say that, though.
I know. Well, now they say now they
now say
what
they were unaware of what they were voting
Judy
on.
Judy Cliburn, well, for House Transportation's head, she said she didn't know. Senator Steve O'Ban said he didn't know. And I think there's a couple of others.
Well, they weren't paying attention because it came up. They actually could have voted it down and said, no, we should go to the others. And when the Republicans were in charge, they did not do that. So I don't know how much attention it got, but it certainly it actually came up for a vote and it was voted down. So I think that if it's based on the legislators not knowing, that's going to be a harder case to make legally than it is with the voters. Because it's true. None of us look at the RCW.
Speak
references.
For yourself.
That law, so the 2015 law.
Oh, no, I speak for myself. Thank you.
The law that the 2015 law that this lawsuit references is the bill that gave Sound Transit the authority to send the package to voters.
Yeah.
It included the content, right? So the language was approved for the by the legislature, and then that went to voters. So it's for both.
Right.
You know that.
Okay. Right.
The voters didn't understand.
So did the legislators that voted for it thought that they were voting on the valuation of the car through O'Kelley Blue Book, or do they think it was through the antiquated thing that they had come up in the early 90s?
No, they thought it was the 2006 fair, yeah, closer to Kelley Blue Book one, uh-huh. which I never get a solid answer on this because we still use the older one until.
Yes,
2028, and it's been that way for 20 years because of bonds
the
that
bonds,
were issued,
yeah.
and they're not paid off until 2028. But for whatever reason, it wasn't clear, according to some lawmakers, and that's the argument. But this is going to be constitutionally about that technicality that they didn't include that RCW, and instead just have that vague reference to that 1996 older valuation system, which they say a lot of people wouldn't understand.
Again, speak for yourself. I'm not understanding vague numbers. All right?
All right.
Thank you, Hannah Scott.
You bet.
By the way, Scott, Irish or English or what is it?
I don't know. I'm Italian, so I don't know where that guy. I think it was from my step-grandfather.
Okay. Just checking. I just want to see, you know, when she offended all of us yesterday with those
That's
words.
Right.
Yeah.
It's an what innate, platform was she standing on? Is she
well, it's a bias,
down
Tom.
On the rest of us.
It's a bias that we're going to close down Cairo for 4 hours to have a conversation about the use of a paddy wagon.
Okay, let's hook arms, John.
No, don't talk. It's a PVC pipe from Home Depot. Yep. By the way, I listened to the show yesterday.
Oh?
I think I was on a roll for some funny, and you stopped it.
I You're listened on to the a show. Roll for inaccuracy.
No,
and
no,
I stopped
no,
it.
No, no. It was me doing an imitation of the Home Depot guy. I had a whole back and forth going, and you just crapped on it.
No, you didn't have a whole back and forth going.
I did.
You whole had a whole forth and going with yourself, not with me, though.
I don't need you back in this. It's me doing two people. I'm
That's
doing
not
the
back and forth.
I'm doing the Home Depot guy, and then I did the protester guy, and you just stopped it. I was listening to the show. I'm like, well, there it goes. There was an opportunity for some fun.
I kept trying to inject news.
We got news. Yeah. People want news. You get news here. You want really, really boring news without accents? Go over to KUOW. All right. A psychological trick in London Transportation Department used to make subway systems seem faster. We like this story because we just love the fact that how you have to nudge people to change behavior in order to get them to do things. It had long been a tradition in the subway, or is known as the tube. I've been to King's Cross, by the way, so I can speak specifically to the tube in London. They had a thing that you would stand to the right to allow people that want to go up the escalator faster to be able to pass you. So everybody would dutifully stand to the right and let people zip on by. But they found that I think only what percentage of people actually use the left lane for passing only?
Well, it turns out that it's specifically in one that's 24 meters high, so it's a really long stretch that almost nobody would walk up or run up on the side, so they thought that was
inefficient. I climb it on the side.
Yeah, I bet you did, on all fours.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I was belaying people after they got from the bottom.
So they thought this would be a good escalator to do an experiment on. It's a bit like when Chris Sullivan talks about merging lanes. People are afraid they stay in line. They don't want to use that empty lane next to them and go up and look like they're trying to cut in on high, and yet we're... logically, mathematically, it would make more sense. We get more people through if people would do that. The same thing with these escalators. There's such a habit that he said, listen, basically you're having a half a step on the escalator not being used, so we are going to force people to double up. And the experiment failed incredibly. People really resisted it, even though they got through twice as fast. And they say, what is that? And so they asked all these people. And they said that they resented having the choice removed from them. They feel like they are independent. Okay, I'm choosing to stand on the right, or I'm choosing to run up on the left, and I want to have that choice. And so when they're forced into it, they resent it, even though it's counterintuitive to what they really want to do, which is get the hell out of there faster.
So if you had more people standing side by side, you would move more bodies up the thing.
Twice
as many.
Yeah.
Right, so... the people, but what happens is nobody likes the idea of somebody rushing up by them and you're in their way. I've noticed that because I'm a run up the escalator guy.
Yeah, you are, huh?
Yeah, and or a run and do the steps. So people are so apologetic when you're like, excuse me, because you're given the access to the free side because you are obviously one expelling more energy, and the other people just sort of standing there like big bags of flesh.
No, but they're big bags of polite flesh because they're responding to the random John Curley who runs by, but most right. of the time people don't bother.
Don't run by.
And so we are so, first off, we're like sheep in that once we figure out something, we don't like to change as well. That's another yes. reason why people didn't want to do that. They notice that people don't want to expend brain power, so they just do what they've been trained to do, and that's always to stand on the left, and so I'm going to stand on the right
yeah.
and let the people on the left go. And so it's really a hard pattern to break, even though it would help people out if they would only do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it just shows you that sometimes when you're trying to improve transportation issues, you're really fighting psychology more than anything else.
The other thing is, talking about moving people along, United Airlines announced the other day that they're going to change their boarding thing from experimenting to eliminating 3 of its 5 boarding groups and just knock it down to 2 boarding groups instead of 5. They think that'll be better.
And how will that speed things up?
I don't know. And they don't know either. And the people that have analyzed this said, I think you guys have tried this before. That's yeah. not exactly the number of, it's the speed in which people get to their seats that causes the greatest problem once yeah. they get on board the airplane. And since more people are carrying more bags because they want to avoid the bag fee, you have more people trying to jam the luggage in and try to lift it up. So it gets bottled up inside the plane. But they think just getting them on to go down to 2 categories would be better.
See, but then it just seems like a mad rush.
Yeah.
So you have 2 big, clots. Instead, it's nice having 5 clots because they're right. smaller clots and you move people on.
I don't think they call them clots, do they? Clots. Jeez.
If you think of them as like it's a bloodstream
and all of a
sudden you get 8 people all surrounded right. by these 2 seats because people are trying to get in, why do you want 18 people there? You like smaller clots.
United Airlines, this is flight 1444 to Tampa. First clot will be boarding now.
Yes.
Second clot, we're going to ask you to clot up to the right. And we're going to be taking all active military. And if those people need some extra help and time to get on board, they're traveling with children under 2.
All right.
Blood thinners passed out for free.
Here we go. By the way, the Eagles, of course, decided not to go to the White House. They were disinvited, but then President Trump said, you're making a political thing out of this. It shouldn't be a political thing. They said, we're going to go on and have a celebration anyway. We got 1,000 Eagle fans that have come to Washington.
1,000? Where did he get that number? Yes.
Sarah Huckabee said yes, it was 1,000.
I know she did.
They have a photo.
Where did they get this number?
Shush up.
It looks like inauguration day. There was nobody there.
That's not true. So the Philly fans,
Eagle
fans, hold on, 1,000
okay.
Eagles fans showed up, and so did, unfortunately, a TV reporter.
Literally 1 or 2 Eagles logos anywhere in the entire crowd. Now, we were told this was an event for Eagles fans and that the team essentially abandoned the fans who were going to be here, but the president never once mentioned the Eagles, and after the national anthem, the president just spoke briefly about why we, in fact, stand for the anthem.
Okay, here are some of the president's comments.
We love our country, we respect our flag. And we always proudly stand for the national anthem. We always will stand for the national anthem.
We stand to honor our military and to honor our country and to remember the fallen heroes who never made it back home. We stand to show our love for our fellow citizens and our magnificent Constitution. We stand to pay tribute to the incredible Americans who came before us and the heroic sacrifices they made.
Okay.
What does this got to do with the Super Bowl winning Philadelphia Eagles?
There's no mention of them at that point.
I know.
I'm sure the 1,000 fans that had shown up for Eagles, Fly Eagles Fly, were disappointed.
They forgot their memorabilia too, apparently.
The guy from the TV reporter there in Philadelphia said he walked along the front row, figuring the people in the front row would be most active fans, mm-hmm. right? And he asked them, do you know the MVP winning Super Bowl quarterback, what his name is, plays for the Philadelphia Eagles?
Or your team, yes.
And of the 6 he spoke to, which is just a random sampling in the front row, and a short of an anomaly of some sort, none of them knew the guy's name.
That's right. The Super Bowl winning quarterback. This would be Nick Foles for anybody who cares about
it. Proof that there were some Philly fans there. Listen carefully. In the background there. You heard it just a little bit. All right.
I think there was one
little egg in the face.
One guy did shout out, "Stop hiding behind the anthem." They said he was quickly rushed out of there.
Okay. There you go. They should have just canceled it. Let's give advice to the White House. Just cancel the whole thing, right? Don't make people stand out there. They said a lot of the people that were there were had their White House ID badges
stuffed in their jackets. It's an APB for anybody in the White House grounds wants to come to this thing. We're looking for people.
Hurry up. Get out there. Amazon will stop selling connected toys filled with security issues. These things came out a couple of years ago. Even the FBI had a warning on these, letting parents know that if the toy has eyes, and that's a camera, and it has ears, and it can hear, you may be sending information somewhere, and your kid's teddy bear is extremely hackable. What's that?
They're called cloud pets.
Cloud pets, yes. Oh, that's what they're called? Cloud pets.
Cloud pets. Get it?
There are so many ways to send love through the cloud.
Welcome to Cloud Control. We have a story from Dad.
Story ready to send.
Receive a story from your dad who's far away. Or a lullaby from Mom every day.
Yes, and here's some accidental photos of Dad in the shower. Oh, my.
So spooky. The thing is, it's a cute idea.
It is not cute.
If little animal, and it's has your dad's voice saying, hi, sorry I couldn't be there for your birthday or your graduation party or whatever.
Right.
It seems like, I think in the brainstorming idea, you think, hey, that would be cute. Kids would love that.
No, because Wired Magazine, Tom, editor-chief Nicholas Thompson says,
these toys aren't sort of set up in general with the best standards. It's hard to update them, to patch things. They're easily packed. They're starting to have microphones and cameras, which are a nightmare. And kids don't have defenses against privacy invasions because they haven't learned these things.
Yeah, see?
Exactly. Oh, no, but that's the thing. And then in the world that we live in, and now with this kind of interconnectivity that cloud makes available, it does make us much more vulnerable. And unfortunately, these things that seem like a great idea, when you think about it, they're terrible ideas.
Yeah, I would say that most parents that were savvy enough in order to buy one of those things would also be concerned, or at least be able to realize, I don't think we have enough security with it. I wonder what percentage of Americans have little pieces of black electrical tape over their cameras on their on their laptops. Yeah. Do you? No, don't even have a laptop. Andrew, can you afford a laptop?
I have a laptop.
Do you have a little piece of black tape, or do people get a chance to look at your face without you knowing it?
I did, and then I didn't for some reason. I'm trying to remember to pull one back on.
It's hard to find that tape.
Well, also just try to remember to put it back on. So that's your plan is to remember to put on a piece of small black electrical tape on top of the camera. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And you think that'll be easy for you to do?
Sorry?
When do you plan on doing this? Do you have a plan on when you're going to do this?
When I remember to.
By the way, there was one animal, a pet,
yes,
called My Friend Kayla,
uh-huh.
And they ended up banning it in Germany because it violated privacy rules by recording conversations without parental consent. So the kids would be talking to it.
Right.
They ended up recording it. You get your kids, there are all sorts of problems, so you just can't have an innocent cloud pet anymore.
It's good for your legs, it's great for your heart, and you'll get a nice butt out of it. Of course, if anybody were to go to compliment you, you wouldn't be able to hear them. We'll explain when we come right back. Here we go, 933. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. Some people in the sales department said, please stop talking about the fact you have no sponsor at 933. Don't keep talking about that. Highlight it by having cats play organs.
Made funny spots.
Didn't it? See, one more way. You'll knock the funny out of the show. You yesterday throwing a big bucket of cold water on my Home Depot guy, and then the salespeople saying, don't talk about no sponsor.
I gave your Home Depot guy plenty of coverage.
Oh, no.
At some point, we needed to move on, John. That's all.
Okay. If Carrot Top were in the middle of one of his exquisite, sort of demonstrations of prop comedy. Be like, okay, I've seen that already.
That's right. Exquisite and Carrot Top, rarely used in the same phrase.
Indoor cycling, Tom, that's what I'm talking about.
You
transition.
Bet.
Yes, it's a big, big problem. Yes, it's great for your heart, but apparently it is toxic for your ears. Now, Don from the Ron and Don Show, Don O'Neill, is, I think, an award-winning 2008 or 2009, he's still living off it, spin cycle instructor of the year.
And he has a booming voice.
He does.
I didn't realize that maybe he has a booming voice because he has to be heard over the pounding music that is common in these places. The average sound, the average noise level in one of these spin cycle classes sounds like it's over 100 decibels, which is way over the recommended allotment for our ears. The doctor's standard is no more than 15 minutes at 100 decibels. Otherwise, it's hard on your hearing. And so now we have this kind of ironic situation. Again, this is according to a long research article in Vox, that even though people are getting in better shape by doing this indoor cycling exercising, they're hurting their ears. And in the long run, it may be more damaging to your health than not.
So what they've also found is that overall, the last sort of survey that they did of American kids between the ages of 6 and 19, 12% of them have already degraded their hearing, not because of spin classes, but because of headsets. So you have your headphones in, and most people are listening at decibels over 110, and you're not supposed to do that any more than 15 minutes. So if you are walking around with the music playing your ears at above 110 for any more than 15, you're starting to do some slow damage. They said that test you're supposed to do is take the headset off, headphones, whatever, hold it arm's length away. If you can still hear the music, then it's too loud.
Is that right? Yeah. So again, this the Vox article, 9 times the recommended noise exposure dose for an entire day, you're getting in an hour's length class.
Some of the places actually will give you a headset. Well, we earplugs, so you can listen through earplugs.
Well, one of the problems, they said, and the reason even the instructors, this is worse for the instructors, obviously, than the participants, because the instructors are doing 2 or 3 classes a day, perhaps.
Yeah.
And they have a concept, they say, but they can't hear the beat of the music. They can't, if they have their earplugs in to protect their hearing, they're not pumping to the music enough. And so because of that, a lot of people, even though some of them offer, to provide earplugs, it gets in the way of the performance, because the idea is it jacks you up. You know, the music is really pounding and makes you more energetic and more exercise oriented.
Here we go, everybody.
What?
2 cranks on that. Let's get up off the saddle. Here we go. And we're going to push through this. We're going to move the arms. We're going to increase the arms as well. Here we are, everybody. Don't forget, if you want, look up there. You can see that your pulse right now, Johnny C's ahead. Tom is way behind. Come on, everybody. And we're going to do some sit backs and up. 2. If you had to sit through this music too, that also causes damage to the brain. Can you imagine Don O'Neill? Oh my God.
Well, I know. But I mean,
his fake tan dripping down his legs.
But you get a great workout. The problem is it worth your hearing? By the way, again, more from this article.
You should be the one talking about hearing. You are so loud. I turn my headset down, right? It's like they say, you take your headset off and hold it an arm's length away. You are an arm's length away from me. You scream during the show. I hardly have the headset up. And I was in a crowded bar last night, silently cursing you.
Because you couldn't hear anything?
No, because I couldn't hear the guy sitting 5 feet away from me, because I've lost the ability in a crowd as your hearing gets more and more.
But you can't blame me on that, John.
Oh,
I know it's a good stunt for the show, but you explained to me that you lost your hearing through one big blast, and that's another thing that this article talks about. So it's the constancy of this loud decibels, you know, these high decibels that kills your hearing, but also you can have damage by just having one loud blow can do the same kind of damage.
Yes.
If you're wondering what it's like, they say, you have 16,000 little hair cells, John. I don't know if you realize that.
I know, they're little like blades of grass.
And it's like a meadow.
Yes.
And when one person walks through a meadow, it's no big deal because the hair cells and the grass just pops back up. But if it's constant, then you end up wearing down that meadow, and you're wearing down your the 16,000 little hair cells, and becomes this permanent path.
Yes.
And that once you have that permanent path, they can't snap back up.
Yes.
You've lost that range of hearing.
That's you trampling my little ear hairs, grass.
But the thing is meadow. That. But it's balanced by not just that, but you also can have one loud boom can deafen you permanently. And you said that happened to you.
At an auction in Linwood. But hold on a second. Jacob, new guy. Tom is loud.
He has a very, it's a kind of a booming resonant voice, I'd say.
Yeah. That's right. I have good projection. That's all it is.
You're right here.
I know.
You don't need to yell.
I'm not yelling.
Are you yelling? Yes, you are.
This is yelling.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just took down some more of my meadow. One last story about things that you can hear or maybe you don't want to hear. In Japan, for some reason, they have a contest every year to see who has the baby that cries the best. This is so bizarre. You have men dressed in sumo, I guess they're sumo wrestlers, and they hold up babies that have little paper crowns on their head, and they sort of agitate them enough to get them to cry. Throwing the babies in the air, shaking like shark things out of bags of broken glass, throwing nitrous oxide in his face. I'm making that up, but for the annual baby crying festival.
So that's a little bizarre, but I think it's an example of why is that even a thing in Japan? Because babies crying in public is frowned upon so severely that the government now decides that they want to start a campaign that allows for babies to cry. They want to allow babies to cry in public. It's such an embarrassment for the family to have a baby cry. They feel so terrible about it. And they say, we need to change this. There's a fight for the rights of infants to just cry. And maybe this is a way to kind of allow them, you know, their a day in the sun. They've got display stickers out that say, yeah, this establishment allows babies to cry. To counter establishment that have stickers that say, no babies are allowed to cry. And here's why the government's getting involved. They say that they have a fertility crisis now there. They need to be a more family-friendly society. And they point out, between the ages of 18 and 34, so, the key demographic, 70% of unmarried men and 60% of unmarried women aren't even in a relationship.
Yeah.
And they need to encourage that. So that's one of its things, is that we need to be more baby-crying-friendly.
When did all of a sudden the culture begin to shift towards, if your baby's crying in public, it's seen as a failure of you as a parent?
Well, in Japan, it sounds like it's been a cultural thing for a long time.
Huh. I have no problem with that.
Encouraging babies to cry in public?
No. No, having babies not cry in public.
Yes. Well, then you could move to Japan and you'd feel right at home.
Like in church, the baby starts crying immediately. Yeah. Immediately, you should get up with the baby and run with the child under your arm like a football and get the hell out of church.
But that makes people feel like, oh, well, people don't like babies, and people don't like where babies come from.
No, people like babies. People like babies with clean diapers, and people like quiet babies.
That's right. Well, apparently they're too quiet in Japan, and so it feels like we need to encourage fertility.
Right, but how long would you allow, like you're at a concert, and the person's got a baby crying, right?
Yeah. No, you.
What do you get, 5 seconds?
Yeah, and if you can't shush them, then you need to leave.
Get them out, right? Okay, got it.
I mean, there are crying rooms in churches. In church that I grew up with, there's a crying room, and that's where you can take your babies, and people are expected to have babies crying there.
In the crying room.
Yeah, it's called the crying room. Didn't
you? Wasn't that a movie?
That's right. Very different kind of movie.
Something going on there.
Movie theaters used to have it, too. Varsity Theater used to have a crying room.
All right, come right back. Let's see. Two stories. I'm going to slip an extra one in here. On robocallers win, even if you don't answer the phone. And then I'm going to also add in there robot women and how they're going to be taking over dating. Remember this yesterday? I showed it to you yesterday.
Department, yes. Okay.
And then I can combine those two.
I'll defer to you for the details.
We'll come right back. All right, you're right to us at MyNorthWest.com. Text as well at 98973. And if you think Tom might say something or think something that you disagree with, please get on him right away. Nip it in the bud. Nip it in the bud, as Don Knotts used to say.
There's
an old reference. Yeah, that was from the Andy Griffith Show. Nip it in the bud. That's right. Text as well at 98973. Why robocallers win even if you don't answer the phone, ignoring a robocall doesn't keep some scammers from making money off of caller ID services.
This is bizarre. I find this hard to imagine why this even happens, but apparently each time a caller's name is displayed, phone companies pay a small fee, typically fractions of pennies, just teeny tiny amount, to databases that store such records, and then some of those fees are handed back to the caller. So when you have a robocaller, they make hundreds and thousands and millions of these calls.
Yeah.
They make, you know, like 20, like 2/1000ths of a cent But because they make like $5 million over the course of a few months, they end up making money. So you think, oh, well, good. As long as they don't answer the phone, they're not going to benefit. They're going to benefit you. They're going to benefit themselves by just calling for you. So now they say that some of these arrangements, the phone companies are trying to change that. And they say maybe we can get rid of that. But it's how robocallers are tricking us by all sorts of cleverer and cleverer ways. Oftentimes they're set up as scams. They're not really local, but they figured out a way. What they do is they buy, you got these companies from, you know, elsewhere, and then they buy up a whole bunch of unused, say, 206 numbers or 360 numbers. So you think it's a local call, and then it turns out that it's not. There are all these clever ways to trick you, and they're even financially benefiting from it. Bizarre.
I get calls during the show, and you've been in here during the commercial break. I'll answer them. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Normally you do old cranky man talking to some guy who's got a thick Indian accent who tells me he's living in Cincinnati.
And you know, because there's like a second or
it's
two delay.
It's a weird
delay.
Number. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the delay comes in there. Here's a question that is being thrown out there by Vox. Sex robots are coming.
Okay.
Could we fall in love with them? There's a guy that's had a sex robot for 3 years, and he wrote in his review, 3 years later, I love her as much as I did on the first day when I met her.
Well, that's not saying much. Oh, that's called love.
3 years, Tom. If somebody meets somebody, I love her as much as I did the first day I met her.
I know.
And unpacked her.
So that's right, but that's not
and
love.
And plugged her in.
I lust her as much 3 years
well, the
in
thing
as
is,
I did the first
what
day.
What they're just starting to look at is, is it possible to love something that's only, is it possible to have one-way love? Because this thing is programmed.
Yes.
Plus, the other part of it is,
clearly,
you realize that this robot really wasn't given a choice as to whether they love you.
That's right.
Right.
Well,
if the thing starts to have artificial intelligence and then it starts to have thinking, well, what if your sex robot doesn't want to have sex with you?
It's like, I'll show you. I'm unplugging you.
Like, hang on. Let me explain this to you.
That's right.
Right.
But one might find that as something of a turn on, because then you can use all your powers of seduction and your powers of, trying to cajole her, if it's a her, back into your arms, being nice and gentle. It might even make you a better human if you had a sex robot that actually resisted some of your demands. Then you would... There are all sorts of potentials here, John.
You wonder at what point would it become socially acceptable for Gary to show up at a cocktail party with a sex robot.
Well, the thing is, right now, we have AI, the movie, it's just a movie, the great movie, Her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not a sex robot, but it is it's a little AI piece that he can put in his pocket, and they converse,
right,
and he's convinced he has a relationship with her, and I think it's as real for him as it is for any other person who's, involved in a relationship. It's just not reciprocal.